shielded her from discovery. These cords, he motioned to the rope he wore at his waist, are infused with the power of invisibility granted to us by our patron, Volantos, the titan of everything unseen, whose goal has been to protect the next oracle. Our patron goddess Artemis granted us this forest to hide you in. When you are enclosed by the cords, you cannot be seen by men or gods, only by Volantos. When you stepped outside the boundaries, everyone was able to see you again. The attack on our school was the first step. They cannot see you while you were here, so they destroyed the school to break Volantos' magic and will send in a ground force next to find you, Father Christopoulos added. They gazed at me. I stared back. For the love of the gods, you're the Oracle, Lyssa, Father Renoir snapped. You revealed our location, and now there is probably nowhere for us to hide where we won't be hunted down and slaughtered like you hunt rabbits. I don't slaughter rabbits. The irrational thought gave way to astonishment. I laughed. No. No. You all have always told me I'm the least special orphan here, that I was graced by Tyche to be around the nymphs, who really are special, I said with a shake of my head. This is a well-thought-out practical joke, though. My gaze fell to Father Ellis. He wasn't smiling. In fact, he appeared dead serious. I choked on another laugh. There was no way, no way, their claim was real. I don't have godly powers. I don't even get an allowance. The cords shield you from the world, and the world from you, Father Ellis replied. It prevents your power from awakening. Why else do you think we permitted Heracles to train you as he did? To survive at the hands of humans and gods, you need to be able to adapt to any circumstance, if you are to fulfill your destiny. None of this made sense to me. Something really weird was going on, and only I seemed to realize it. My chest felt as if it was being squeezed by an invisible hand. I couldn't wrap my head around how any of this was possible. But they truly believed it, no matter how insane it sounded. I'll play this weird game. My destiny. What is it? To break the bridge and send the gods back where they belong. To return humanity to the old ways. To freedom, Father Renoir said quietly. You only need to outlive the current oracle. We hoped to hide you until that day when she passed, after which you could live a normal life once the gods were gone. It is the deal we struck with Volantos, the reason he wanted you hidden, and the promise we made to Artemis, whose heart has been weighed down with the treatment of each oracle. When she discovered you were only a child, she offered us her help. We must, in turn, deliver on our promise. I wanted to laugh, but something about the severity of their features stopped me. Everyone knew Artemis had a soft spot for little girls in trouble, and about the brittle nature of the relationship between the Olympic gods and Titans after the war that saw the Titans exiled to another dimension. The Titans swore vengeance. The idea I was in any way involved in the doings of gods? When I'd barely been allowed to participate in sports on campus? Was absolutely crazy. You guys can't be serious. We are, Alessandra. And now that they know where you are, they'll be hunting you. They who? Everyone, Father Ellis said with a shrug. The Supreme Magistrate will hire, coerce, or order all of those beneath him to locate you, and the Supreme Priest will enlist Sisa to do the same. You are worth more material wealth than anything that exists today. The gods will reward whoever finds you with... I can't imagine. A priest knows nothing of wealth, except the reward is beyond the most ambitious dream of anyone alive. You're starting to scare me, I said. If this is a joke, It needs to end now. I searched the face of each. If this is not a joke, then... It was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. I had spent my life being treated like a burden by the priests and an ugly little stepsister by the nymphs, only to find out this? That I was the reason we were all in the forest? That everyone on the planet was searching for me? That the Supreme Magistrate, the most powerful man in the world, and the person who priests despised most, knew who I was? We will have to go to the alternate plan, Father Renoir said. We need to reach the existing oracle. Father Christopoulos responded, but my thoughts were in splinters after the bombshell they dropped on me. I struggled to digest all the new information I'd learned today and do what Heracles trained me. Focus on what had to be done next. Anyone have a cell phone? I asked. I need to talk to Heracles. They fell silent and exchanged another look. That won't be possible, Father Christopoulos replied. Because? I prodded. Because your disobedience not only cost us the school, but tipped off someone who knew to look for him, Father Renoir replied. He was captured. No. He's too strong. Even as I said the words, I had the urge to run, to find him and demand he refute the story the priests were telling me. You're right, honey. He's probably distracting them to give us time to evacuate you, Father Ellis said. Then we have to go get him. Think about this, Alessandra. Assume everything we're telling you is the truth if you can't believe it outright. People will give anything, do anything, to find you. The best thing you can do to help Heracles is to not be where he thinks you are. He loses his value to his captors at that point. And they'll free him? I asked. Possibly. It wasn't a ringing reassurance. If action movies were remotely based on reality, Heracles was probably in danger of being killed if he wasn't useful to his captors. I was starting to worry this all was real. All this just because I stepped outside the boundaries. It seemed too crazy to be true. It was inevitable, Father Ellis replied. It was foolish of us to think we could cage you forever. What's important is we find a safe place for you now. And rescue Heracles, I pressed. Heracles is the strongest man in the world. Chances are he will buy us time and won't need our help to be rescued, Father Christopoulos said. For once, he made sense. I didn't see Heracles staying anywhere involuntarily. Can I ask where he went at least? Washington, D.C., Father Ellis answered. I was born and lived just outside of D.C. until I turned 6. If everyone in the world was looking for me, I doubted I could walk into the nation's capital and find Heracles unnoticed. Not that I was buying this nonsense. Except that I kind of was. I was scared enough to believe what they said without understanding exactly what it meant to be someone of importance. To be hunted. To be an oracle, the most cherished and highly regarded human in existence. It made little sense after my humble upbringing here. Where do I go? I asked, quietly, unable to dispel the urge to find Heracles no matter what the priest said. We have a backup plan. We're waiting for someone who will take you elsewhere. Who? Fathers Christopoulos and Ellis looked at one another briefly in silent communication I didn't particularly care for. You needn't worry, Father Ellis said. I'll be going with you. In the meantime, I need you to keep this on, no matter what. He stepped forward and took my arm, wrapping a piece of red cord around my wrist. I felt no different, but assumed it was like the boundaries of my home, capable of blocking me and the world from one another. Do you have any belongings you need to collect? Father Christopoulos asked. I shook my head. I owned nothing of value.
Very well. Remain here with Father Ellis.
The four of them turned and left. I watched them. This didn't feel any more real than watching the strange, grotesque creature at the lake. It had to be a dream, a prank, an epic misunderstanding. Things are about to change, Father Ellis said. It's only right I give you this. He held out a small pouch. Heracles left it with me for safekeeping, in case something happened. I think this qualifies. It belongs to you. I accepted the small velvet pouch and opened it. Something glimmered inside. I dumped it into my hand and stared at it. A teal gem on a plain chain with a bronze finish nestled into my palm. The jewel was huge, clear, and so bright it almost seemed to glow. Its multifaceted surface reflected sunlight and caused faint rainbows to appear in the air around it. Wow, I breathed. It's mine? Even as I asked the question, I knew the answer. It felt like it belonged to me. The strange sense wasn't something I'd ever experienced before. It was all you brought with you when you arrived. You don't remember how you came to have such an incredible piece of jewelry? I shook my head. I don't remember anything from before the day we got here, I murmured. I closed my hand around the gem and considered replacing it in the pouch. It didn't seem natural or right for me not to wear what was mine. I tugged it over my head and tucked it into my t-shirt. The gem settled against my chest. It's special, whatever it is, he said. I know. Uncertain how it was possible for me to understand a gem I'd only now laid eyes on, I stepped away, too wired to be still. Father Ellis sat down and closed his eyes to meditate. How can you pray at a time like this? I asked in agitation. What better time is there to pray than when you're in trouble? To each his own, I rolled my eyes. Chapter 3. There is nothing permanent except change. Heraclitus. How fast can my reality, world, life in general transform into the impossible? I was waiting for Father Ellis to laugh and tell me he was joking about everything. But as the next 2 hours passed in silence, he didn't change his story. He was quiet and calm, choosing to meditate in the peaceful meadow. I initially paced, then sat and stared at the sky, lost. Everything they'd said began to sink in. When I realized this was real, or at least the priests believed it to be real, I also knew I had to do something. I stood. The monk was seated cross-legged in meditation, his eyes closed. I'm going to get my emergency pack, I told him. I waited for him to tell me not to bother, because they were messing with me. He opened his eyes. Is it far? Half hour? I'll wait here. My insides were shaking when I turned away and started into the forest. Yesterday, I was desperate to leave the forest. Today, I was scared of the same thing. It was stupid of me to be so worked up. I didn't buy the idea of me having power, but I did know we couldn't stay here when the place we all lived was destroyed. And there's Heracles. He was the strongest man alive and had been for 15 years. But I worried about him. If something else was going on here, like maybe the priests were lying to me for some reason, or hiding something worse, then I wanted him with me. I trusted him. I loved him. I couldn't leave him trapped in someone's basement or prison or wherever he was. even refusing to believe that I was the Oracle. I found myself looking closely at the red cord around my wrist and wondering if it really did what the priests said it did, hide me from the world. I moved through the forest to the place where we kept emergency packs and stopped at the base of the large old tree in whose trunk we'd stuffed supplies. Pulling on the pack, I tightened the straps and rifled through the other supplies to make sure I wouldn't need them. The crack of a branch made me tense, and I straightened, listening. Someone was there, not the priests, who didn't know how to walk with discipline, but someone who was trying to navigate the forest without being discovered. The occasional brush of cloth on wood, the careful placement of slow footsteps. Pulling free my knife, I faced the direction of whoever was following me. "I can hear you," I called. There was a pause, as if the forest was waiting too. Finally, someone spoke. "I seem to have gotten lost," the man said. He eased out from behind a thick tree trunk. The stranger was dressed in the type of clothing indicating he wasn't a lost camper, but someone who wanted to blend in with his environment. He carried several hunting knives and was built like he knew how to use them. His exposed forearms were scarred and tattooed. A tattoo wound around his neck and disappeared into the clothing covering his chest. He was too handsome to be a priest by far, but it was the gleam in his eyes, the spark of a predatory awareness Heracles had taught me to be wary of, that disturbed me. He had the look of a soldier, aside from his medium-length hair. "Where are you trying to go?" I asked, and eased away from the stash of supplies. "You with the orphanage?" "Where are you trying to go?" I repeated. He snorted. "My employers are located somewhere in this forest, a priest named Christopoulos." His gaze went to our surroundings, and one of the tattoos on his neck stood out. The mark of Hermes, a winged foot, was surrounded by other ornate inkwork. Heracles had taught me about the different guilds of the Underground Society of Criminals. I filtered through what he'd forced me to learn to identify the marking. "You're a mercenary," I said, surprised.
"Not a mercenary. A gladiator," the stranger corrected. "But I do merc work on the side during the off-season."
I didn't think someone could bear the tattoo of a mercenary and not be one. Mixed martial artists belonging to the Gladiator Guild were street fighters paid handsomely for beating the daylights out of another of their kind. The line between the legal and illegal markets of being paid to fight was blurry, and I didn't fully understand it. Except that this man wore a tattoo that designated him to be something other than what he claimed he was. "So you fight and kill people for money," I said, recalling what the priest told us about one of the occupations they favored least. They looked upon gladiators with disdain, and mercenaries with outright horror. "Not exactly the godly values they teach you, I know."
"I think it's cool. I can fight too."
"Sure, kid," he flashed an insincere smile. "Which way is it?" I bit back my response, irritated he didn't believe me. And to call me kid when I was 18, an adult by most standards, though today I felt like I was being treated like a 10-year-old again. The mercenary was younger than Heracles' age of 35, younger than the priests, and close to the age of all my favorite Hollywood actors.
"Whatever," I muttered.
"What kind of gladiator gets lost in a tiny forest like this?"
"One hired to fight, not to track," he returned.
I was tempted to mislead him, to teach him a lesson. A look at him, though, and I recalled what Heracles once said about not deliberately pissing off someone who could pound me into the ground. Priests were one thing. They adhered to strict rules about nonviolence. But a gladiator or mercenary was another. Turning away, I put my knife away and started towards the meadow.
"I'll race you there."
"You want to race me?" He fell into step behind me, amused.
He was over 6 feet tall and muscular in a way the teen boys at the campground neighboring the property weren't.
"Why not?" I snapped. "You think I can't run?"
"I think I don't want to explain to the priests what happened to the little girl in the forest who fell and impaled herself on a tree trunk because she tried to race me," he replied, with arrogance that made me want to ditch him in the swampy part of the forest where he'd accidentally discovered quicksand one summer.
"Really?"
This man couldn't know I had been raised by the strongest Olympian in the world. Satisfaction sank into me. I loved the opportunity to prove someone wrong, probably because I rarely had the chance.
"See if you can keep up," I challenged, and then bolted.
For the first 50 meters, he almost did. I pushed myself harder. I had the advantage of knowing the forest, and led him through a route that included a few downed trees. Larger and heavier than me, the gladiator soon fell behind as he struggled to navigate spaces more suitable to someone my size than his. I reached the meadow triumphant and slowed to a trot as I broke free of the forest and headed back to the priest. Reaching him, I turned to wait for the gladiator. He appeared a full 2 minutes later.
"I found the mercenary you hired," I told Father Ellis. "What made you all want to hire someone like that anyway? Don't you hate them?"
Father Ellis climbed to his feet, facing the gladiator striding across the field towards us. "We needed discretion and loyalty."
"Money buys both," Father Ellis said.
"Though we paid for a gladiator of some honor, not a mercenary."
"Yeah, well, he has the tattoo of a merc,"
I observed the approaching gladiator. He was grinning as if pleased by the exercise, his sharp gaze on the priest beside me.
"Heracles said you should never pay someone like that. Besides, I can take care of myself."
"Not against what comes."
Ignoring my look, Father Ellis stepped away to greet the gladiator.
"I am Father Ellis. You must be Nico."
"I am."
The gladiator shook his hand.
"You're late. We expected you hours ago."
"The airport is locked down. I had to find a creative route here," came the easy response. I kind of liked that Nico wasn't fazed by the priest's chiding. Nico wasn't really what I expected of a mercenary. I had the vision of a gold-obsessed pirate in my head for some reason. And the clean-shaven, practically attired Nico was nothing like that. The edge of wary arrogance definitely fit the image I'd created.
"You've met your charge, I see," Father Ellis said.
"What, this little girl?"
Nico motioned to me.
He looked me over critically. I crossed my arms, irked that even the guy they were paying to take Heracles' place was judging me. Before I could say anything, Father Ellis rested his hand on my forearm.
"Lyssa is humanity's most precious member."
Father Ellis had stiffened.
"Coming from a priest who doesn't believe in violence, that doesn't mean much."
Nico flashed a quick smile, though his cold eyes were never still.
"At least she's tough and can run. I had expected someone more delicate."
What was worse, being called a kid who couldn't run or fight, or being considered unladylike? Nico wasn't winning any points with me. I wasn't a nymph, but I had outraced him.
"Can you really fight?" Nico asked me.
"I can," I proclaimed. "I can climb, camp, hunt, run, fight. I can do everything."
"She had a very motivated guardian,"
Father Ellis said with some disapproval. "Neglected her studies, but she can run." What was wrong with these people? Judging me for being prepared for the situation they knew was coming?
"Whatever. Let's go."
I shifted my pack.
"Go where?"
Nico asked, gaze once more on Father Ellis.
"To wherever you're taking us," I replied.
"My contract was for stationary service in a place with 3 square meals and a real bed."
I pointed towards the school. "That place was blown up."
"We have a situation," Father Ellis said simultaneously.
Nico planted his hands on his hips. Seeing the priest squirm under his glare made me very happy after my day.
"Are you going to tell him about the ground forces coming?"
I prompted innocently. Quiet, Lissa. Father Ellis turned towards the school and began walking. Come with me, both of you. I went, mainly because I had nowhere else to go, and a little because I wanted to see Nico and Father Christopoulos in an argument. I'm not going anywhere until the contract is defined, Nico stated. If you wish to be paid, you will come with me, Father Ellis replied. I looked over my shoulder as I walked, waiting to see what the mercenary would end up doing. He was watching us unhappily. Finally, he started forward, tense and bristling, eyeing the forest with wariness I didn't share. His long strides closed the distance to Father Ellis and me, and he stepped onto the deer path we walked on. Can you really hunt? He asked me. I can. Good. At least you'd be useful if your priest tried to pull one over on me. I glanced at him, not liking the sound of that. I will take you whether they pay me or not. There's an underground market for someone like you. Nico, do not scare her, Father Ellis said. You'll be paid above and beyond what we promised. What do you mean, someone like me? I asked in confusion. If I am what they think I am, there's only one of someone like me. Of me. Of whatever you think I am. You're an initiate, aren't you? Nico asked. Do I look like an initiate? I retorted. Lissa, hush. Father Ellis shot me a look. Let us deal with him. He stepped from the forest onto the greens. Father Christopoulos, he cried. The head priest and Father Renoir stood with a pile of items that had been salvaged from the building. I started to follow, but all four turned to yell, Stay in the forest! Oh my gods, I groaned and jerked back to make sure I remained where they told me. Nico appeared amused, then hardened as he stepped past the red rope onto the greens. He paused several steps away and turned to face me. Who or what do they think you are? He asked, leveling dark eyes on me. I fell speechless, uncertain what to do. It kind of felt like everyone was lying to everyone else. Nico claimed to be a gladiator, but was really a mercenary. And the priests told him I was an initiate. Nico studied me. He seemed to find answers where I didn't mean to give them. I'm guessing you're worth much more than they offered. Better hope they're willing to pay to keep me from kidnapping and selling you. I almost laughed, but realized he was serious. He winked and walked away. I began to regret not sending him off in some random direction when we met. The fact he was doing this for money made me feel a little dirty, or tainted. Or at least capable of understanding why the priests looked down upon shady men like him. Watching them speak, I waited for someone to yell or give some sign it wasn't going well. The distant sound of thunder reached me. The sky was clear, aside from puffs of smoke left over from the school burning. Weird. Thunder and no clouds. The earth trembled. I waited for it to pass like it might in an earthquake, but it didn't. The tremor remained constant, and the thunder loudened. With the four of them busy talking, I dropped my pack and scaled a tree quickly. I reached the top and poked my head up above the canopy, expecting to see what I normally did, kilometers of wood followed by a break where the road was, and more forestry on the other side of the break. Trees were being knocked to the ground and flattened by machines I wasn't able to see from this vantage point. It had started near the road and was moving towards us, downing whole swaths of trees for a kilometer stretch. What could do this to a dense forest of mature trees? Was it the work of the ground forces the priests spoke of? I was embarrassed to admit I had no idea whose ground forces they were referring to. Or even what ground forces really were. Did the military intend to run over the forest to grab me? Or was it the CISA, the International Secret Police Force tasked with internal security of the human race by the gods?
Was it even legal for someone to mow down an entire forest?
I shimmied down the tree and replaced my pack. The four priests were huddled together a short distance from Nico, whose gaze was on the forest in the direction of the thunder. He alone seemed aware of something being wrong. Catching my gaze, he lifted his chin back towards the direction we had come and mouthed two words. Run. Now. Fear lit in my blood, followed by concern for the priests. I stood frozen for a moment, debating what Heracles would have me do. Survive. And if I was what the priest said I was probably putting them in danger by being with them. I took one step back, then another, not at all certain I was about to do the right thing. I turned and began to make my way quickly through the forest to the east. The crashing of trees soon became more audible, and I did as Nico said and sprinted. I ran until I no longer heard the sounds of something crunching and grinding the trees of my forest beneath it, and slowed only when the peaceful sounds of nature were present around me. Without stopping, I snacked on a protein bar and continued walking for another hour and a half, covering the distance between the school and the lake in record time. And then I stopped at the boundary, as I had been trained. Gazing at it, I couldn't help the guilt that floated through me. I was afraid to leave the forest this time, because I knew what would happen if I did. A part of me remained in denial about all that had happened in so short a time, that the destruction of everything I had ever known was connected to the simple act of me going one step too far. I sat on my tree stump, staring at the lake. It was mid-afternoon, and I hadn't forgotten the creature I saw either. No, I wasn't going to cause more trouble. My determination lasted until I heard the birds begin to vacate the forest around me. The sound of machines wasn't present, but the animals were fleeing something. I had no idea where to go once I left the forest and remained where I was, on the verge of panicking, yet knowing that was the worst thing to do in a crisis. I miss Heracles. He would know what to do and where to go. 20 minutes later, the unmistakable sound of someone running through the forest reached me. I rose and hurried to a hiding spot close by, anxious to see who followed. Lissa! Nico's quiet cry reached me before he did. Or Alice, whatever your name is. We need to go, now. I peeked at him through the brush. He reached the tree stump, his gaze sweeping expertly around the area. He was sweating, and bloody. One hand was caked in it, and there was also blood on his shirt. Come on, you little shit! With some hesitation, I stood. Are you hurt? He whirled to face me. No. Is someone else hurt? I asked. You could say that. He strode over the cord towards the lake, oblivious to the importance of the red boundary marking the edge of my world. I walked until my toes reached the rope, torn about leaving. Shouldn't we wait for Father Ellis? Nico didn't stop. No. He can't move as fast as us. What is your name? Alessandra. He spun to face me, backpedaling as he spoke. They're gone, Alessandra. They took a different route out of here. My jaw dropped open. They left me? These people pursuing you? Pursuing us? Aren't the kind of people I'm used to dealing with. This is Sisa. They have the god's blessing to kill fast and without mercy. Running was the smartest thing for them to do. He wiped his bloodied hand on his pants. You can come with me now, and we'll make it out of here by the skin of our teeth, or you can stay right there and wait for Sisa to get you. Gone. In all my preparations for the apocalypse, or perhaps this incident, I understood being alone to be a part of the scenario, but wasn't quite able to wrap my head around it any more than I could the fact I was allegedly important. How could I go from being constantly surrounded by 40 people to alone. Why didn't they take me with them? This hurt more than anything.
Fine, good luck.
He turned away.
Wait!
I cried and started forward. Realizing what I had done, I twisted to look at the red cord boundary I had spent most of my life avoiding. I was leaving it? The safety of the forest? My past? My home? Basically everything behind me. It was scary and exhilarating all at once. Nico wasn't waiting. Unable to stop and contemplate the world behind me, I charged ahead and ran to his side. My eyes went to the sky automatically, and I sought whatever creature had tracked me last night. Reminded of the rope around my wrist, I wished I'd thought to ask more questions about its power, about what I supposedly was, about what in the name of Holy Olympus was going on. And how could the priests just leave me with a mercenary they didn't trust? How was I so important, yet not worthy of a farewell? The idea they were watching over me out of obligation and had never wanted anything to do with me stung hard. I kind of considered them to be my extended family, however dysfunctional that was. I never suspected they didn't feel the same.
Where are we going? I asked Nico to take my mind off the pain.
You tell me. Where did your priest want you to go? I was quiet. Nico glanced at me.
They didn't tell you either, huh?
Great. Well, you're not coming home with me. I don't even think I can go home if you're important enough for teams of CISA special forces to smash through the forest.
I don't know where to go, Nico.
Just pick a place. Won't matter so long as it's away from here.
Washington, D.C.
Worst place to be when the government is after you. Although, he drifted off, gaze going to the west as if he could see D.C. from here. It might also be the best place to be. CISA won't expect us to go there. I didn't care what reasoning he found in it. I was going to find Heracles, the only man in the universe who wouldn't abandon me at the first sign of trouble like the priest did. The cracking of tree trunks sounded behind us, followed by the faint tremble of the earth.
Won't matter if we don't get out of here. I hope you can run as far as you can fast. We need to move.
Nico took off running towards another thatch of forest lining the opposite side of the lake. I followed, unable to shake the sense of guilt, unease, and fear churning in my belly. The destruction of our home was all my fault. Maybe that was the real reason why the priests abandoned me. Because I destroyed everything they loved. Chapter 4. The Grotesque. Not even the gods fight against necessity. Simonides.
What if your prison is revealed?
I glanced up at my master and friend as he entered the isolated apartment where I lived on a compound in central D.C. The compound housed little else than my quarters. There were too many secrets for me to live among normal humans. Nothing. Washing my bloodied fists in the sink at the bar, I dried them and poured him his favorite drink. Unlike most men, the Supreme Priest preferred fruity drinks with umbrellas to shots of hard liquor. They won't say what's in the forest.
But you felt something.
I did. Something familiar.
It bothers you.
My hands paused as I finished his drink. Lantos sat on a stool at the bar. He removed the mask he wore in public to reveal the face of a man in his 30s with sparkling green eyes and a smile that seemed out of place for someone with such a stately position as the god's advocate to humanity.
I know you, Adonis, Lantos chided gently. Better than you know yourself. What did you sense?
It was unlike me to hesitate to share any thought with the man who saved my life. Yet something about what I'd experienced made me balk at the idea. I closed my eyes and tilted my head, bringing up the memory from the night before, of the calm lake reflecting starlight, the scent of pine and other trees in the air, and the peace that always came with leaving the confines of the city to hunt. Beyond the pleasures of nature, I'd sensed a flicker of awareness, an instinct buried so deeply, it shocked me to feel it. What I'd experienced had nothing to do with the lake, or what might have been present. Something inside me was awakening, and I wasn't accustomed to such mysteries or surprises about myself. "I don't know," I said. "Whatever they hide there, it's familiar to me on a level I should know." "Your memories have begun to return?" Opening my eyes, I shook my head. "Not at all. There is nothing before the night you saved my life." "Your beast instincts?" Baffled. Rustling from below me drew a smile. The tiny creature at my feet, an animated stuffed koala bear, was pawing my leg like she did every time I returned to the apartment. I had no memory of obtaining the toy, no idea how she'd come to life. I only recalled waking 12 years ago to find her and Lantos hovering over me in worry, and the life-threatening wound in my side, healed by the magic of Lantos's titan father. "Hello, Mrs. Nettles." I greeted the toy and picked her up. I didn't remember how she came by that name either, but she insisted I call her this. "Pink," she said, and shuffled over to the Supreme Priest. At times uncannily wise beyond her years, she was at other times nothing more than a moth drawn to sparkly or bright things. She was currently fascinated by the umbrella in his drink. "For you, Mrs. Nettles." Lantos handed her the umbrella. "How are you today?" I shook my head at his look. She was too bedazzled to respond. No one heard her but me. "Any luck on figuring out if the Silent Queen or Magistrate are involved?" Lantos asked. "They're keeping things tightly held." I mentally went over the reports and activities of the day. "We destroyed the forest and found these everywhere." I lifted a gym bag onto the counter and withdrew a red cord. Lantos's eyes lit up. He picked up one and held it over his forearm, then lowered it. The rope cord turned to something resembling smoke. His body absorbed it. "Part of your power," I observed. "What is it?" "These, Adonis, keep gods and men and everyone but my father from seeing what they protect." He lifted another and dropped it into his forearm. "I gave these to someone around the time I rescued you, under orders from my father." "Who isn't about to tell you what he was protecting?" Lantos grimaced. "A demigod. He was the disowned son of a titan, marooned on Earth when he disobeyed his father and cut off from everything and everyone but his own eclectic mix of power." "No, but I can guess. The men downstairs in prison. What are their names?" "Heracles and Tebald." Lantos grinned. He stood and paced, his step energized. "Adonis, you are incredible. One tiny instinct gave way to all this. We only need Heracles. Send the others to the house or wherever you make men disappear. And go back to the forest tonight. We need to know what happened to Heracles's charge."
"Alessandra," said Mrs. Nettles.
She was gazing at me. At times, I considered the notion my toy was possessed even more so than usual. Her voice was different when she said the name, and the gleam of intelligence was in her eyes. The umbrella was forgotten at her side. An image I'd never seen before flashed into my thoughts, that of a little girl clutching a blue gem.
Just as quickly, it vanished. His charge. You think that's what the forest and cords were hiding?
I know it is. I gave these to Heracles and a priest 12 years ago. The last order of my father's I obeyed was to hide the new oracle.
Oracle, I repeated. Finally. We'll be able to start phase 2 soon.
Exactly. But we need to beat the queen and magistrate to her. The gods are too busy to prepare her trials. I've maneuvered them into letting the triumvirate determine what challenges she must overcome before her power manifests fully, as is customary. Each member of the triumvirate gets to task her once.
I listened. Lantos was a man of shadows and secrets buried beneath a brilliant smile. That he'd been planning for an event no one knew was coming didn't surprise me.
You have a trial in mind already.
I do.
He smiled. And it has to do with phase 2. Lantos's sole motivation in life was to carry out his father's revenge in the hopes of being granted asylum with the rest of the Titans. His single act of disobedience, saving my life, had seen him cut off. Together, we'd risen in power, with a combination of my unusually strong adeptness at political maneuvering and his magic and ambition. Despite my skill at obtaining power, I had no desire for it. I would always bend my will to Lantos.
We will get to her first, I considered.
You said Heracles is her guardian?
Lantos nodded. I'll let word leak that he's here, and post a reward in the online boards of the Merc Guild for capturing her. If she's got a fraction of the power of a goddess, she won't hesitate to unleash it to find her guardian. Someone will notice. I placed Mrs. Nettles on the ground and moved out from behind the counter. It was almost past sunset. I peeled off my weapons and watch in anticipation of the change. Tonight I'll return to the forest and look for any trace of where she went. The image of the unknown girl flashed once more, and this time brought a stab of pain.
Your nose is bleeding, Lantos said. I touched my nostril and gazed briefly at the drop of maroon on my fingertip. The pain subsided, and with it, the vision. Just sinuses.
Why did I say that?
It wasn't sinuses, and I knew it. The urge to lie to the man to whom I owed my life had been instinctive.
Alessandra, Mrs. Nettles said once more.
Lantos was gazing at me closely, a flicker of something dark in his gaze. Normally Lantos was the moon, and me, the night sky. His outgoing, optimistic personality sometimes grated on others, whereas my silence was usually taken with caution, if not fear. People were able to sense the predator I was without seeing me in my secondary form. It helped that my reputation, well-earned, was nonetheless much larger than my deeds. I cleaned up my nose and felt the trickle of fire that went through me every time I was about to change.
How go your holy wars?
Exactly as planned. We're keeping the magistrate's men busy outside the wall, and the gods in disarray, fighting one another rather than us. I brokered another truce today.
Only you could do something like this.
Stop baiting me. It was your idea. Divide and conquer. By nature, I tended to toy with the people around me. It wasn't malicious, more instinctual. I made every effort not to do so around Lantos, for the simple reason that he was my friend.
Like a true war leader, how do you come up with such ideas?
He asked, half in jest. I shrugged. It made sense for the situation.
It's tied to your past. Your hunches are too good for them to be just hunches.
And I told you, I'm not remembering anything yet. If I guess correctly, it's not done consciously.
Any insight or hunches as to what Artemis is up to?
Lantos asked casually.
Of all the gods stuck on Earth, Artemis was the only one who hadn't sought him out to help establish a territory or broker deals with the Supreme Magistrate's men. It was common knowledge among the gods and goddesses that Lantos was one of them. Crisis kept them from demanding his exact lineage or asking too many questions that might reveal him to be the son of their enemy.
None. The gods are your business, not mine.
You've proven frighteningly accurate in everything.
If I knew, I'd tell you, I replied. I hear nothing through the spy networks, and no indication your fellow triumvirate members have any insight either.
Lantos nodded.
I'm about to change, I said, and pushed off my boots.
See you in the morning.
Fly well.
Lantos's smile returned. He replaced his mask, bowed to Mrs. Nettles, and left my flat.
I went to my room and stripped out of my clothing before heading to the balcony.
Mismatch.
Mrs. Nettles never called me by the name Adonis, which I'd adopted after Lantos saved me. Mismatch was the name she claimed was mine before Lantos. She was shuffling after me as fast as her stubby legs would go.
What is it, Mrs. Nettles? I asked. Quickly, it's my time.
Don't hurt her.
You know what phase two is. I must obey Lantos, I replied gently.
You'll see.
This was definitely one of her double possession stages, when she seemed to have knowledge beyond her or my ability to access. My attention shifted to the fire growing inside me. The moment the sun dipped beneath the horizon, my body began its nightly transformation. Black wings sprouted and spread from my shoulders outward. The hair on my body disappeared, and my head grew heavy, my features malformed and hideous, my body thickening and growing half a foot taller. Talons sprouted from my hands and toes, followed soon after by a barbed, whip-like tail. Not even Lantos knew how and why this transformation occurred. I resembled the stone grotesques and gargoyles perched on the temples of the gods. Beneath the dark gaze of Nyx, I often flew and sat among them, waiting for any of them to come to life and join me for my nightly hunt. They never did, and I was left with a sense of loss to reinforce the knowledge I was alone.
Fly,
Mrs. Nettles clapped silently, and watched my wings flare out. The vacant look was back in her face. Whatever secondary possession took hold of her, it was gone once more. I wasn't entirely alone. I had never met another animated toy either. We were different and unique, thrust together by circumstances I didn't recall. I bowed my head to her and turned my attention to the sky. My beast senses were strong even in human form, and completely unleashed when I was a creature. I swept into the sky, barreling upward until I was above the city, then flinging out my wings to catch an air current and hover. My heart raced from the ascension, and my shoulders warmed from the exercise. I turned my focus north towards the forests of Maryland and began flying. My grumbling stomach would wait for now. I needed to complete Lantos's mission first. The odd instincts were stronger in my beast form. The draw of what was hidden in the forest, the compulsion to find it, her, nearly beyond my ability to curb. I needed to know for certain if the image of my mind was accurate, and why I'd done the unthinkable and lied to my only friend about something as unimportant as a nosebleed. Whatever was going on, it didn't take the primal urges of a beast or a warning of a stuffed animal for me to know. The world was about to change.
Chapter 5. Alessandra.
Even a god cannot change the past. Agathon. I always imagined how I'd feel the day I left the forest. The reality,
that I was forced out alone with no home to go back to didn't hit me the way I expected. I was worried about Heracles, sad for the priests, glad to be away from the nymphs. But I didn't feel like crying. It seemed weird. How was I so calm watching my life crumble?
You still with me?
I blinked out of my thoughts to look at Nico. He was driving a car he had stolen, much to my disapproval. We had fled the area of coastal Maryland, first on foot, then by car, and were on a major highway headed south towards D.C. It was almost 1 a.m, and I was exhausted. After my adrenaline wore off, I'd begun to wonder why he was helping me if he didn't get paid for the job. I'm fine, I said.
You in shock?
I don't think so. My skin isn't clammy and my pupils aren't dilated.
I meant mental shock, you little shit.
I rolled my eyes. He was quiet for a moment, eyes on the road, before he spoke.
If we're going to do this, we need some rules.
My brow furrowed and I studied his profile.
One, you may know how to run, fight, and hunt, but your guardian didn't teach you the most important lesson.
I tensed, not about to let him insult Heracles.
You are out of your god's damned mind if you think you should be talking to, or trusting, or otherwise not running at the sight of a stranger, especially one who looks like me. The men hunting you